Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
We hit the field light, all day light, all night light. Here we go, Keep it on. We don't hit them light.
This is the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast with James Rapine and Daryl Ryder on 92.3thefan.com.
What up, and welcome into another edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast, an emergency podcast where we have breaking news about the next Browns head coach. Daryl Ryder and I are going to discuss that and so much more in just a second. A quick reminder, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, the radio.com app, and wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you leave a five-star review so more Cleveland sports fans can find us. All right, Daryl, let's dive into it. By the way, Daryl has a ton on this on our website at 92.3thefan.com. Kevin Stefanski will become the 18th full-time Browns head coach in history. And the Vikings offensive coordinator, I expect to hear more about the front office and things like that. And we're going to dive into all that stuff. But make sure you check out Daryl's work at 92.3thefan.com. Daryl, It's been a crazy 3 days. It's included me bugging you. Via text. It's included plenty of tweets for me and you about this situation. Friday, it felt like it was Josh McDaniels, which we'll get into. That didn't happen. And it looked more and more like Kevin Stefanski or Robert Saleh. And Stefanski won out. He's the next Browns head coach. Your initial reaction to this news and thoughts about it.
Well, I don't think Stefanski won out. Paul DePodesta is the one that won out because Stefanski was his choice a year ago. So a year later, here we are. The good news for the Browns is he comes from an organization of stability. He spent 14 years with the Minnesota Vikings, survived three different head coaches. So that obviously, I think, speaks to the quality of coach that he is, that three separate head coaches felt it important to keep him on staff despite making multiple other changes. You know, philosophically, and I wrote about this on the website, you know, everything's going to be aligned now. The resistance to Paul DePodesta and the analytics department, and that should be eliminated. Jimmy Haslam made it very clear on January 2nd when he spoke with us after parting ways with Freddie Kitchens and then John Dorsey, that, you know, organizational alignment was a priority. And under his ownership, they have never been from at least on the football side of things, they've never been aligned. There's always been friction. There's always been people speaking in different language and having the owner's ears and the tug of wars and the internal fighting and cannibalism and dysfunction and all this other stuff that has gone on. So these guys are all in the same boat. They're either going to succeed together or fail together. And, you know, we'll see how this plays out. But Paul DePodesta got his way, and Kevin Stefanski's finally the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, albeit a year later than DePodesta would have liked it to be.
Yeah, let's talk about Stefanski a bit, because obviously we know him from the Vikings. You watched his offense struggle against a really good San Francisco 49ers defense on Saturday night. From an offense perspective, look, I get it. Here's my concern with Stefanski, and I've made it known and I've made it very clear. Despite him being in the Vikings organization for 14 years, 1 year as an offensive coordinator. And I think it's a great point you mentioned where he survived three different head coaches, because that matters. At the same time, can he come in here and command the room, command Odell, command Baker, command these guys, because they're in win now mode. And I think we forget about that, but this is very much a win now environment. And if Kevin Stefanski's 4-6 going into week 11 or week 12 next year, we're talking about, is he it? Is he the guy? And we're having our doubts. And I don't think we would have necessarily had that with Josh McDaniels had he come in here and struggled early on. So to me, that's a big 20 years of dysfunction, Daryl. As you know, that's a lot to overcome. That's hard to overcome. We've seen Baker struggle with that a bit. And they need someone in here that can handle Baker and handle the offense, but also handle the entire locker room and command the locker room. Freddie Kitchens certainly couldn't do that.
And we'll see if Kevin Stefanski is able to.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, he is, from what I understand, he's a little bit of a disciplinarian, so he's not going to take any grief from anybody. Some of the unnecessary penalties we saw last year, you know, the tauntings, the late hits, you know, the those type of things, the controllable 15-yard penalties, you know, those things should get cleaned up, no question about it. You look at Minnesota's offense, you were talking about that a little bit. He had some success this past year with the Vikings. I know everyone's looking to that playoff game with San Francisco as the litmus test of why he should not have gotten the job. And listen, I said this about, Freddie Kitchens going into the season finale in Cincinnati. You cannot make decisions in a vacuum of one game, okay? Sure, yesterday wasn't, or I should say Saturday, as we record this on a Sunday afternoon, it certainly was not his finest hour. He absolutely got schooled by the 49ers defense, but the bottom line, they're a top 10 team in scoring, okay? They scored 5 more points a game than the Browns did this past year, and they don't think had as much offensive talent as the Browns had. They were a top 10 team in rushing. Kirk Cousins was among the top 5 in passer rating. He had an excellent touchdown to interception ratios, like 26, 27 to like around, 6 or 7, something like that, just off the top of my head. Okay. Mm-hmm. I get people, well, he's only a coordinator for a year and a half. This is Freddie Kitchens 2.0 and all that. But I think he's an upgrade over Freddie Kitchens.
Doesn't say much, though, Daryl.
I understand. And here's the other thing, too, is does he command the same respect that a Josh McDaniels would? I don't know. We'll see how this plays out. I guess the two positives. They upgraded at the position, as you said, wouldn't take much. And then also the organization, whether you believe in the philosophy or not, whether I believe in it or you, it's immaterial. Fans, it's immaterial. And I know that there's a lot of negative reaction to this hire, and I get it. Okay. But you know what? If I had a dollar for every other head coach that we absolutely love the hire of, let's be real. Okay. And they've all failed. So, I'm going to judge this thing as we get into the season as to whether or not he was the right hire. And I'm going to judge the front office that's coming in here, based on what they do in the offseason. And hopefully they don't tear this thing down. Hopefully they build off of what has been accomplished from a personnel standpoint. So we'll see how it plays out. I really don't have a positive or negative reaction either way. I'm kind of in the middle. I don't have a hot take about it, really. It's just, let's see what happens. But I understand why they went this route. And I don't know that I necessarily agree with it. I don't think that having, even if they are speaking the same language, the Haslams, having everybody report to them independently, it's failed before. I'm worried it's going to fail again. I thought that Josh McDaniels going in and requesting organizational change and whatnot. I mean, my God, since taking over ownership of this thing, the Browns have been an abomination. And I'm looking up the record real quick because I want to be accurate on this to be make sure to not only drive the point home but to be fair in my criticism of the Haslams. Since the sale of the team closed on October 25th, 2012, the Cleveland Browns are 32-88-1. They're responsible directly because they inherited people that year. They fired everybody after 2012. So since they fired everybody and started hiring and firing their own people in 2013, their record is 28-83-1. So, I mean, the audacity of Josh McDaniels to walk into that meeting on Friday in that interview and suggest that they make some significant organizational changes. I mean, how dare he, of the 6 Super Bowl ring coaching the greatest quarterback of all time on the resume lineage there under the greatest coach of all time in Bill Belichick. My goodness gracious, how awful he would suggest the Haslams needed to change how they operated the franchise.
Yeah, and that's what worries me here. Because what have we talked about over the past 5, 6, 7, 8 years? It's always been what? A power struggle. It's been multiple different guys going in their way. You got the report from Seth Wickersham last year about how John Dorsey flexed his muscle to get Freddie Kitchens. And now it's kind of like it's Paul's turn. It's Paul's turn because he wanted McDermott, who ended up in Buffalo. And so far, Sean McDermott's done a good job in Buffalo. He didn't want Hugh Jackson. Oh, he didn't want Freddie Kitchens. Guess what I keep hearing? About all the times they got it right, which means Paul D. Podesta is, guess what he's doing? Leaking that, guess who I wanted? I wanted McDermott. I didn't want Hugh Jackson. I didn't want Freddie Kitchens. All right, well, first off, thanks for leaking that. That creates tension in the building when that leaks. And leaks always happen, as you know, for a reason. And the other thing, Daryl, with Paul, and we can get into Josh McDaniels too, like you said, because obviously I was on team hire McDaniels. I just the fact that he won this, like you said, that worries me because is he all in on the Browns? He's not in that facility every day, and I know he calls in.
And that's a problem. And I'm going to pause you right there.
Yeah,
that is a major, major problem, is the fact that people that work in that building are sick and tired of him having the owner's ear, and he's not even in the building every day, and he's judging everything that they are doing without being in the building every day. And that's why in my column I mentioned, he's the serial commuter from California in teleconference commuter as well, because he's in Haslam's ear second-guessing everything that they're doing. And that's a problem. And we don't get to talk to Paul D. Podesta. He's hiding in the shadows, okay? Mm-hmm. I see him in the press box. He doesn't look at anybody. He doesn't talk to anybody, okay? He just goes to and from his seat where he's watching the game, and it's quite frankly, it's antisocial behavior is what it is. And so it's understandable that people in the building don't like him and have reservations about him. I have reservations about him. It's not whether I like the guy or not. Because the deal is his reputation come from Major League Baseball, and I noted this again in my column that I wrote, is that everywhere he went, Major League Baseball, he won. He was known as an organizational builder, okay, from top to bottom, from scouting and personnel to on the field to data analytics and everything else, okay? And he was successful everywhere he went. It's taken 4 years now for him to get his way, okay? It's taken him 4 years with the Browns for him to get his way completely, because he had to weather through the Sashi Hugh Jackson wars. He had to weather through the John Dorsey wars. And now he's going to get a GM that he aligns with. And I believe that general manager is going to be, a familiar name, Andrew Berry, who spent last year with Philadelphia as their vice president of football operations. When he was here, he was one of three or four vice presidents of player personnel, and also one of the co-authors of 1-31. That guy's going to come in.
That's what scares me. Why are people, and there are a part of the fan base that's excited for his return. I wasn't here then. Why would you? I guess there are people who still think Sashi was good. Obviously, he wasn't. But what do you get from that? What is your takeaway with in thoughts on him coming back, Andrew Berry potentially coming back to the organization in a GM role, where he's not only doing analytics, but having the final say on players on the roster.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's responsible for the only player that or players, I should say, that Sashi Brown produced, Myles Garrett and Joe Schobert. So
hell, they didn't want it. They didn't want Myles Garrett. That part of the building didn't, remember?
I know.
That's a real thing. Mitch Trubisky. Good God.
I know. So Andrew's a great guy. He's got a wonderful family. He's an up-and-comer riser in the ranks. I just don't know that the Cleveland Browns are the right spot for him for his first head football executive role. I have reservations with that. Alonzo Highsmith I don't know where he fits in now. He might not fit in anymore. I don't know. Elliot Wolf, also brought in by John Dorsey, where he fits. I don't know. I mean, hopefully, I'll say this. Okay. If those two guys stay, if Elliot Wolf and if Alonzo Highsmith remain and they work under Andrew Berry, I would feel much, much better about this thing going forward. But if Berry comes in and those two guys go, I'm going to worry tremendously about their ability to evaluate talent.
Shouldn't that be what happens anyway? And this is what really annoys me about the Browns. Because in 2016, they go all in with Sashi and Hugh, and they marry those guys together. And they say, we're going to have this balance of analytics, and we're going to use analytics, and we're going to do that. But then you have Hugh, the football guy.
Yep.
And in reality, that's how it should work. It should be balanced. Not all in on one thing and not all in on the other.
Well, let me explain what happened there, though. Okay, when Hugh was hired, it was all, okay, we're going to turn this thing around, achieve greatness. We're going to, you know, we're in win now mode. Mm-hmm. And then 2 months later, they said, this roster really sucks. We got to blow this thing up. And what we need to do is go into a 5-year plan. Let's swap out these players we're paying significant dollars to. And let's focus on acquiring draft picks, acquiring assets, and saving our salary cap space for when it's time to actually really, truly invest in the roster. And that pissed off Hugh Jackson. And Hugh Jackson looked around and he saw guys like Joe Hayden being let go. And he's like, you know, what the hell's going on here? Well, F this. And that's how you ended up with 1-31. And I noted this in my column today as well. And I hate, please go read it on the website, because I tried to provide some perspective on some things. And one of the things that we, you know, learned, you know, 1-31 was completely avoidable. It didn't happen. But because there was such a big pissing contest between Sashi Brown and Hugh Jackson, Hugh Jackson kept saying F it and didn't care. Okay. And kept fighting. Well, the Miami Dolphins this year, and this is proof that Hugh Jackson shares a lot of blame for that stretch under Sashi Brown. The Miami Dolphins did exactly what the Browns did in 2016. They stripped their roster. They sold off their good players for draft picks. Saves opened up salary cap space. They managed to win 5 games this year. Okay? So that's one fewer game than the ultra-talented 2019 Cleveland Browns did under Freddie Kitchens. Mm-hmm. So that's just to kind of provide some perspective here. And so what's going to happen now is all these behind-the-scenes pissing contests that have gone on over the years, going all the way back to Mike Pettine and Ray Farmer and Rob Chudzinski and Mike Lombardi and all that, okay? All that stuff should go away now because DePodesta, whether it's Andrew Berry or somebody else is the GM, and Kevin Stefanski, they're all going to be rowing in the same direction. And I from that standpoint, James, I think Browns fans can at least feel good that these cliques or these factions within the building are being dissolved. Does that make mm-hmm. sense?
Yeah, you know, and it needs to be that way because you're a team. Right?
Right.
You and I, when we approach events, when we were working on the same events, the All-Star Week, right? Guess what? You, me, and Ben were a team. We were in lockstep with each other and communicated. Can you imagine if you were worried about what story you were writing versus what I was doing versus what Ben was doing, that we would all clash. So
right.
I totally get that. I do. And from that aspect, it works. And I guess this is a good point to kind of push the conversation forward. That's why I like Josh McDaniels, because where does he come from? An organization that, yeah, led by an old school football guy, but you better damn believe they use analytics and their coaches have a say in the analytics and use the analytics and embrace that and embrace those stats. Cause that's what they are. They're advanced stats.
Yep.
That these teams put together. So McDaniels, not only would he be able to work with his analytic guys, but the coaches he brings in would be working in lockstep, position coaches and coordinators and all of that. And so to me, That's the way I wanted to go, is because you got a really, really smart, and so many people praise DePodesta for being really smart. But Josh McDaniels, you're talking about an extremely smart man by all accounts, right? An experienced coach, 6 Super Bowls, offensive coordinator for 3 of them, and has Brady's ear like you wouldn't believe. So that to me, when you combine that with his failure, everyone mentions his Josh McDaniels failure in Denver and says, oh man, well, most coaches do get fired. Mm-hmm. Most do. Most great.
Well, you're hired. You are hired to be fired, as they say, right? The question is, how long can you survive before you get fired?
But the thing is everyone says he's smart. And what do smart people do? They learn from their mistakes. I think Josh McDaniels had a plan and a plan with a talented roster to come into Cleveland right away and be successful, but also establish and create a culture that they've never had. And I wonder now with, again, a less experienced guy in Kevin Stefanski, who's never done it, never had a trial run of 2 years to go through his mistakes and learn from them, combined with your question marks with Paul T. Podesta and what he means to this organization now. And I think they got it wrong. I'll say that. Now, does that mean Kevin Stefanski isn't going to do well and this won't work? No, I have no idea. None of us do. But I think Josh McDaniels is the best candidate, the most likely to turn things around and overcome 20 years of dysfunction. And they don't go that route. And this is what was alarming to me. Albert Breer said it. I think Dustin said it. You certainly said it. But the fact that the Browns weren't willing to make organizational changes that Josh McDaniels wanted, that is very frightening to me if I'm a Browns fan, because you're talking about an extremely smart, accomplished coach, better than any of these other guys, better than Hugh Jackson. And we all thought Hugh would have success, but better than him, better than Freddie Kitchens, obviously, more qualified than any of these guys we're talking about.
Yep.
And he's like, this is what you need to do. We can have success here. I want to be here. These are the changes we have to make. And the Haslams were not willing to do that. And they didn't want to make changes. They think it can be more of a plug and play type of situation. And that sounds great. And but I don't think it's that simple, especially when you were talking about sustained winning, which is certainly what the Browns want to do. So what happened with McDaniels and why didn't it get done? Because it felt like on Friday, like it was going to get done. I think you thought it was pointing that way. I know I did. And I was buckled up and ready to go. And it did not happen.
Well, full disclosure, I actually had a Josh McDaniels hired by the Cleveland Browns story written and ready to go at a moment's notice. That's how confident that I that it was going to get done. But this is, hey, you know, it's Jimmy Haslam's world and we're all living in it. You know what I mean? He and D Haslam and J.W. Johnson, they own the team. And it's their prerogative to run it however way they want. And unfortunately, since taking over, all they've done is run it straight into a ditch. So, again, why on earth would you contemplate making sweeping organizational changes when how you've run it for the last 7 years has worked out so great? And the results have, you know, borne that out. And the amount of severance checks that you've had to write. He was the guy that I thought was the most qualified in talking to people. I felt like, you know, with Baker, he was the guy that could really ride him and just have the cachet to just be like, you know, because, you know, if Baker ever gave him any grief or whatever, he'd just say, hey, dude, I got 6 Super Bowl rings. That's 6 more than you have.
Mm-hmm.
I coach the greatest quarterback of all time, who also has 6 rings. I coached four.
Instant respect with Odell. Instant respect with Jarvis.
I can tell you that I have it on pretty good authority that Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry both wanted Josh McDaniels. They were ready for it. I wonder how they're reacting to Kevin Stefanski. So, I'm not interested in player surveys. You know,
something else with that though.
Yeah.
Daryl, is what have we seen from Stephon Diggs this past year under Mike Zimmer, who's an extremely disciplined coach? I mean, he's a hard ass. That's what he is. Temper tantrums on the sideline, bad body language, back and forth movement. You're Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Like you're in that Jarvis range, I guess, of talent, but you certainly aren't Odell. What's going to happen when it's Odell doing that? And Kevin Stefanski needs to make sure that doesn't happen. I don't think that'll happen with Josh McDaniels. And if it does, they'll get better from it. You know, he's gotten into some arguments with Brady on the sidelines, but guess what? Right. Then they go out and win. Yep. So just a point I wanted to mention here before.
Well, not, and not knowing that, but here's the thing too. And this isn't just the Browns thing. It's the reality of the NFL. Okay. Stuff hits the fan all the time. You face adversity, stuff goes wrong, off the field issues, locker room drama, whatever, right? Clashing personalities, guys aren't getting the football, whatever. Okay. How you deal with that, you know, Freddie Kitchens proved himself completely incapable of dealing with any of it. Right.
Yes.
I thought, you know, you made a great point. You know, Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick and Tom Brady, I don't think all three of those guys are like best friends, right? Especially Brady and Belichick. But you know what? They have a respectful working relationship, okay? And it's, I need you, you need me. We both need to be at our best if we're going to accomplish what we need to accomplish. And that's the attitude that Baker Mayfield and this football team needs to take, okay, is I need you, you need me, we all have to be at our best to accomplish what we all want to accomplish, right? And is, you know, can Kevin Stefanski be that guy to extract that out of these players? And then also when the stuff hits the fan, you know, whether it's, you know, Odell throwing a temper tantrum on the sideline or Baker, or, you know, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You know, how does he deal with, how does he handle those type of situations? I don't know. I don't have the answers to that. I don't think anybody does. And that's, you know, something that we are going to find out. And again, that's why I'm not sitting here saying this is the greatest hire in the world for the Browns and he was the best guy for the job. But it's also why I'm not sitting here saying that the Browns made a colossal mistake and they're going to rue the day that they didn't hire Josh McDaniels and went with Kevin Stefanski. Don't know how it's going to play out. Let's see. You know, we've done the win the press conference and the coaching hire victory laps in Cleveland before, only to see guys get fired after a year or two. So I'm going to sit back. Let's see how this thing plays out. You know, my goal over the next couple of days is to really get a good handle on how they're going to operate going forward, what the organizational philosophy is, even though I have a pretty good idea as it is. And, you know, the one thing that, you know, you can feel really good about from the dealing with player standpoint is, and I know you pointed to the Diggs statistics, but, you know, unlike Freddie, who I think it was Jarvis that talked about at the end of the season, how with Freddie, it was about plays and X's and O's rather than just taking advantage of your opponent's weaknesses and exploiting them and positioning your players to be successful, that, you know, Stefanski's about that. He's about using probabilities. He's about, you know, using that data or analytics, as everyone likes to say. And there's nothing wrong with analytics, okay? Analytics is there to help you make better decisions, to increase your probability of success from an intellectual standpoint. You know, hey, what did our opponent run from this with this group of personnel, this formation on this down and distance, okay? See, that's great, but you also need players to win, okay, and execute and be able, you need quality players, and without quality players, you can't win, plain and simple. So I don't have a problem with an analytical approach. I don't think it's a bad thing. The issue that I had under the Sashi Brown regime was they kept getting crappy players. Like, that was my thing, was like, okay, you accumulated all these draft picks and you drafted a bunch of guys that can't play, that aren't in the league anymore. So, That was my disagreement with that particular sure. regime. You know what I mean? But I have no problem with using analytics and, you know, probabilities. And that's what smart teams do. But guess what? Bill Belichick did. Bill Belichick did that when he was with the Cleveland Browns
mm-hmm.
back in the early 90s. OK, so that the analytics, you know, some fans talk about it like it's a four letter word. It's not. It's not. It's actually a very good thing. It's an intelligent way of approaching things. And let's be honest about it. The Cleveland Browns haven't exactly had an intelligent way of approaching things over the years, especially with the Haslams in charge. But I think that here going forward, they will. We're just going to find out, you know, what type of players fit in to their trains of thought. And it's my understanding they're not going to blow this thing up. So
I hope not, because here's the thing, man. When you look at analytics, I'll tell you right now, and when you look at data and what you need out of, let's say, your second wide receiver or your first wide receiver, when you compare it to the linebacker need, for example, I don't know if they want to pay two wide receivers $30+ million total. You know, spend a ton of money on two guys like that in Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry, especially at the production of last year. Now, I'm not saying that Andrew Berry's going to come in here and trade those guys, but at the same time, would I be shocked if it's like, yeah, we can get, you know, B- production and move on from one of these guys and use that money towards a linebacker, use that money towards a tackle, or use that money towards, and heck, some people think that they should do that anyway. I'm not one of them. I will say, though, thinking back to Jimmy Haslam's press conference, he was like, no, we think we have a good foundation of players here. And by the way, I will say this with McDaniels. I don't think he meant come in here and blow up the roster. I think this is very much a behind-the-scenes type of thing. He loves Baker, all right? The Patriots wanted Odell. The Patriots have loved for years and years and years a guy like Julian Edelman, Wes Welker. That's what Jarvis Landry is. He's a slot wide receiver who can make the plays on third and six that you need. So I don't think McDaniels would have came in here and blown up the roster either. I think it was very much a behind-the-scenes type of shakeup that could have given the Browns continuity in the culture that they were looking for. But it was fun while it lasted. I do think that Kevin Stefanski will be an upgrade. And I think it's safe to say, regardless of who they got, Daryl, it's going to be an upgrade from Freddie Kitchens. How much of one?
Right.
I'm not sure, but certainly something we'll be talking about on this podcast and you'll be covering throughout 2020.
Yeah. You know, like I said, I don't have any hot takes. I'm sorry. you know, but let's see how this thing plays out. I certainly understand the direction that they're going, some of their thinking. Hopefully I'll be able to provide fans with a deeper understanding and whatnot. But, you know, I would say, like, Josh McDaniels would have required zero explanation if they hired him, right? Whereas the Stefanski hire, Di Podesta's influence, the front office, there's a lot of questions now that need to be answered. And hopefully the Browns in the coming days here are transparent about it and, you know, help us kind of convey to the fans and answer for the fans some of these questions that they have. Because as I mentioned earlier in the pod, like I think we've talked to Paul Di Podesta maybe 3 or 4 times tops since he's joined the organization. And that includes his introductory press conference. And that includes like drafts and what, like, he should have to talk now
because like, he's the one who led this.
Right. Like, you know, we don't have access to him. So, maybe some in the national media have some access to him or whatnot, but the local beats, we have no access to Paul Di Podesta. So I really hope that we get some so that, again, we can really get a deeper understanding, because perception is reality. Right now, there's a negative perception of this guy. And that's because in the absence of information, well, you're left to speculation. So he got his guy a year later than he wanted him. But as I wrote on the website, and go check it out, Paul Di Podesta's fingerprints are all over this one, because you had the two owners, the son-in-law, the capologist, and Paul Di Podesta. That was your search committee this year. So there's some splaining that needs to be done. And I don't mean that in a negative way. But I do think it would behoove the Browns to be very transparent about what led them to bring Kevin Stefanski in as the 18th coach overall, 10th full-time coach hired in the expansion era, and the 5th hired by the Haslams since the 2013 offseason.
He's Daryl Ryder. I'm James Rapine. That's going to do it for this edition of the Cleveland Sports Beat podcast. Like he said, make sure you're checking out his work at 92.3thefan.com and subscribe to this podcast, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, the radio.com app, wherever you get your podcast. We'll be back at it later, maybe later this week, certainly next week on a weekly basis. But for the time being, while we're waiting for introductories and everything like that, keep it locked on 92.3 The Fan and 92.3thefan.com. For Daryl Ryder, I'm James Rapine. Thank you so much for listening to the Cleveland Sports Beat Podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.